originally we started working on a project around homelessness. Myself and my co-partner on the project at the very outset is Declan Markey, and he's works for the Ballyformer Partnership. And myself and himself, he's an educational coordinator for the Ballyformer Partnership, and he had a whole history around working in services associated with homelessness. And we were at a party, basically, and this had been on the back of my mind for a long time to do a project that looked at homelessness. So both of us had a desire to do something different outside of the way the services were dealing with this subject, and also are kind of slightly removed from the way artists had approached the subject. I wanted to kind of approach it from a different angle. And so we agreed to do something and independently, without funding or without being offered an exhibition anywhere. It was totally off our own bat. So we basically set about researching and looking into the concept of homelessness, which Heat FM has come out of. And although Heat FM doesn't directly relate itself to homelessness, it originated from the original idea to do a project around homelessness.
Okay, and then when you felt that the 18 to 25-year-old group would be an interesting group to speak to, how did you find them, or how did you select the people to speak to?
Well, first of all, we decided on the, just to maybe kind of alter that question slightly, if I'm okay.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
Well, one of the people, we were getting nowhere attempting to enter a lot of agencies associated with homelessness. And so we went to the Dublin Region Homeless Executive and we asked them to sanction us. So we had to have a whole kind of memorandum of articles or a manifesto as to, and working ethics and principles. And we presented those to them on request. And when we did that, they agreed to help us. And then they serviced us by creating connections for us with the homeless agencies. And one of those connections was a woman by the name of Fiona Barry, who was a senior services manager for Crosscare. And Fiona really helped us. And she kind of mentored us for the first couple of years. And through the course of looking at homelessness, we came across an awful lot of issues surrounding homelessness. And homelessness for us we kind of felt doesn't exist. What exists are issues associated with mental health, addiction, housing, all of these other areas that, when they're brought together, create the situation of homelessness for an individual. And so we felt it was really confusing. If you really go in intensively and you examine the subject of homelessness, it's very confusing and it's very, very, very broad. So to try and create one project around homelessness was virtually impossible. So rather than to try and attempt to do that and fail radically, we felt we needed to home in on a specific area. And I was becoming increasingly kind of frustrated by the complexity of the concept of homelessness, or the reality of it, and I should say. And at a meeting we asked Fiona, look, you know, there's so many services, there's so many facilities, there's so much happening, there's so much kind of rhetoric and talking around, so what's actually missing? And she said, advocacy for 18 to 25-year-olds. So I went, great, so let's look at that then. So then we set about looking at that. So I think we knew pretty much that a radio station would suit, because really people needed to be heard and listened to, and on the media and in the media and in all its different platforms, people are, the sound bites associated with it, and people are usually seen or experienced or heard or read in the negative. There's some trauma associated. And we went, the most of the people that I ended up meeting through the course of my very intense research period were completely normal people who just have issues, very, you know, normal issues. So we felt that, you know, the big issue for us was around the stigma, the stigma of having mental health issues, the stigma of having no home, the stigma of having no money, the stigma of having addiction, the stigma of all of these different things. So stigma is the thing that kind of came up for us through the course of the project, and we wanted to remove the concept of stigma. So therefore, rather than focusing on homelessness, we chose to look at the 18 to 25 age group in Dublin in its entire capacity, from people who don't experience prejudice or don't experience the associated behaviours of stigma and all of those other things, and just home in there. So it's a long-winded answer, but when we knew what we wanted to do, the situation arose whereby the Arts Council sent out an application looking for national projects for 2016. So we felt that, you know, it'd be very interesting to reflect a generation 100 years later. And so we fitted what we wanted to do within the criterion that the Arts Council was looking for to gain funding. Through the course of the international selection panel that came to select the projects, they felt our project was suitable, and we were one of the 9 projects that were selected. And by doing that, we received our funding, which we applied for to do that. So once the funding was established, I went about hiring 2 project coordinators. And the role of the project coordinators was to go to every service agency in the city in a very bureaucratic process. And we became Garda vetted. We had a vulnerable adults policy document in place. I'm probably one of the few artists that will have something like that with respect to their work. And we set about approaching the agencies with all of this backup behind us, with the Arts Council, the Department, the 2016, the Dublin Region Homeless Executive, Cross Care, all of these people who are sponsoring us and supporting us and mentoring us. So we found it easy to access people. So we just basically went out and spent about 3 months arranging meetings, meeting people, and then meeting the facilitators mainly, and then independently finding people, we ended up setting up the situation of how we would go about creating conversations. I'm really sorry for that incredibly long-winded, it seems, but that's exactly how we went about doing it.
It seems from listening to the people when they're speaking, they're very natural. And you mentioned soundbite. It almost sounds like something that's the opposite of soundbite. It's you have any sense of how long the conversations would be, or how did you feel that you'd put that together?
When we met everybody, we said to them that, you know, I'm not a journalist and I'm not a media company. So we had a very specific release form that said that they could withdraw anything at any point. We went and approached them with this idea that they could choose anonymity if they wanted to. And we had a very serious protection policy with everybody. So we met people, the contributors, maybe once or twice before we even sat down to record. And we made everybody kind of feel very comfortable, and we explained to them that the generation that they are hugely misrepresented in the media. So therefore, we wanted them to give time to anything. So the other rule was that we weren't prepared going into the meeting. So if we went into a recording, we'd have no preset questions in place. There was nothing like that. We just went in completely open and sat in a room on a completely level peg, and if they wanted to start the conversation, they would, or if we did, we would, depending on our mood or our manners. So what we found is that it was really about the art of conversation. So there was one thing that we did say that we weren't going to focus on, which was we didn't want to focus on anything negative. So we weren't looking for the X Factor story. We were looking for the normal, the banal. What books are you reading? You know, do you keep a pet? You know, so some of the people that we might have met come from very positive backgrounds. Some people come from very difficult backgrounds, but we weren't going to focus on those, even though we may have had those conversations outside of the recording process.
Yeah, it was when I was listening, it was interesting because it was overwhelmingly positive from people talking about the Ongashka things they'd done, or just talking about films they liked or their experience of travelling.
One of the big features for us, there's three criteria, or two areas. As a work of art, which this is, it's a portrait in sound and broadcast. And that's a very important part of the project for me. It's a portrait. It genuinely is. If you equate it to someone painting a portrait of a group of people, that's basically what we've done. And we've chosen a specific theme. And I suppose I wanted to create an artwork that has love, care and compassion at its center point. And that's what interests me, love, care and compassion. Those three words. And the context of the conversations were about ambitions, passions, those things. So, you know, the conversations had a different motivation. They were about, you know, it was about them, not about me. So the overall concept and the entire work, you know, in terms of the overall thing, is the Garrett Phelan project. But we, through very much Michelle Kinsler and Victoria Evans and Declan Markey, the other team members, they very much promoted the concept of that it's not about me, as in Garrett Phelan, it's about them. And so I had to really remove myself and any agenda that I had and put it right to the back. And it was very much about their ground and talking to people on their ground, and we came together through the course of that, the team and those people who contributed.
And were there interviews or perhaps conversations that you found that were particularly compelling or that brought out that love, care and compassion really well? And with that, I suppose, did you feel that there was anything particularly different from when you were that age?
No, I was kind of very much, it was almost like a therapeutic process for me, talking to people about their experiences, because I have the comfort of being 25 years beyond being 25, because I'm 51. So I, one thing I did feel is that I miss being that age in one sense. And, you know, so that was quite kind of difficult to be hanging around that group of people. I wanted to hang out with them, but I'm 51, so I can't do that anymore. Yeah. But, well, you can, actually. But, you know, they were, every conversation was fantastic. And I don't mean that to sound, I think there's this whole culture of celebrity, there's this whole culture of handpicking people that's going to be suitable for a good interview. What I found is that everybody has a story. Everybody is interesting, no matter who they are, no matter absolutely who they are, everybody is fascinating. And, you know, that's, you know, not a revelation in one sense. But when it comes, when our radio station's positioned in the context of what you hear usually on radio, people, journalists go out to find good, really interesting. And, you know, it's all about sensationalizing the experience with the person on the radio. We didn't. We went for the banal, the completely normal mm-hmm. person on the street, and give them the voice in as much as we possibly could. And, you know, everybody's got a story, and I think that's what interests me. It's not about isolating one or looking at one specific thing. Is that, you know, it's a station. It was a work, a portrait of everybody 18 to 25. And if I could have continued doing it and recording as many 18 to 25s as possible, I would have continued to do it. You know, but you know, I think that, like, on a broad scale of everybody in the planet, regardless of their age, you know, everyone is interesting, you know, I think.
And kind of with that in mind, why did you think that the anonymous was an important part of it? We're so used to radio introducing and telling us who the person is. What was the anonymous part?
I think it empowers people. Anonymity, when it's by choice, empowers people. And it's you know, it's this, you know, people wear them, you know, the I think what anonymity offers is a deeper, intense level of communication with somebody, you know. And I think anonymity, when it's imposed on somebody, you know, where people don't care about the person, that people aren't, you know, that's a whole different experience. So I think it stems from really my research into, you know, homelessness originally, and looking at addicts and looking at people who suffer from mental health who are completely forgotten and left aside. And I think, so there's a kind of, we felt it was really interesting to offer people that option, but we also felt that if any person chose to waive their anonymity, they could absolutely do so. So when it came to the branding of the project, and we used other people's work, we used the contributors who wanted to creatively engage with this. We offered them, you know, look, do you want your name to be credited? Because we needed to do a creative release form for everything that we give, mm-hmm. And contribute. And that goes into our Heat FM archive, and which we're incredibly grateful for. And so a lot of people decided, no, I do want my work to be acknowledged and credited accordingly. So we set about a good document to make sure that, you know, they will get full accreditation, and that won't become again associated with me. It's not my work, it's their work, created the look and feel. And Peter Mabry, the designer, brilliant designer, you know, kind of created an ambiguous package for that, whereby his design work didn't really impose upon their work. But so, and then we created the 29 poster sites around the Dublin with the Irish poster company who do the advertising, Irish poster advertising. So they positioned them quite well. So I think what we did, even with the Irish poster advertising company, is that, you know, we took 29 poster sites because 29 people gave us 29 individual works, and we didn't have a selection policy. If you gave me anything, regardless of what it was, our logic then and our position then was to exhibit it or show it or turn it into our branding, regardless of what we felt or how good we felt it was or how bad we felt it was. We didn't apply a judgmental editorial process on what people contributed to us. And that's all on our website, which is heatfm.com. Everybody's work is on the front end of that, and we made sure that, you know, everybody gets credited. And so we try to be, I know it sounds a bit ridiculous, but we try to be as perfect as possible. But you know what I mean? Like, it's a really ridiculous thing to do, but we were very conscious that it's about them, it's about their work as well, and rather than just being purely about me and my work, you know?
Maybe to wrap it up a little bit, but and to bring in my own particular interest in this, is when you're talking about a portrait in sound and broadcasting, why use FM? I mean, what do you think people would think if they find it on FM just randomly? Or what would you like people to think when they come across it and they hear it?
Well, there's three audiences that I always make reference to my work. There's me, which is like I service myself principally. Then there's the art world, really, which I work within because it's another audience. And then there's the accidental audience, and I love the accidental audience. I suppose, what do I want people to? They'll see, if they have a digital reader, they'll see the Heat FM logo on that pops up in their car or at home if they have that facility at home. And so there's a means to which you can find out a little bit more about it. But maybe just the difference, you know, and that idea and that symbol of difference, and the fact that we're not, you know, following the rule of broadcast, this production rule that's been shoved down the throats of many media students, whereby you have to have things technically perfect. You have to have your ads, you have to have your news, you have to have your weather, you have to have your jingles, you have to have all of this standard production processes. And look, I listen to radio all the time, and I love radio, and I like that format. But I think what's lovely about the BAI offering us a license is that they give us the license and they sanction us, is that they offer an opportunity for something slightly different to happen on the FM bandwidth. There's a whole other area about why I use radio in my work and why I have done history of radio in my work, which is a whole other kind of rationale. And then there's the whole reason, why do I do something quite simple and normal? And accent is a huge thing. The issue of class arose for us in a massive way,
yeah,
about how class inequality in Dublin, in the greater Dublin area, is huge, and it's unacceptable. And there's a very easy fix to it. You know, in through some of the conversations that really struck me were the ones where, you know, the issue of accent and class and the location, the geography, and where you sit and live within the city, and what your address might prevent you from getting a job. And, you know, that's what I loved about the project, is that, you know, the young people themselves aren't prejudiced towards each other, but we live in a society that does create a prejudice about, you know, people's geographic location and where they're from and their, what they sound like. And what they sound like, just purely on a sonic level, if you're interested in sound, which I know you are, and like the different ethnic backgrounds that we were talking to, all of this beautiful stuff, this beautiful simplicity in that sound and listening processes, which really I find fascinating and interesting.
And
Dublin's a very different place to what I grew up with in, you know, 50 years ago. There's so many fantastic noises and sounds through people's voices, that, and you know, it's so, that aspect of the work sings out to me as well as quite a positive thing. And you don't hear that much on standard radio. You know, we don't hear as many different accents. There apparently we went to the one of the Irish Refugee Council, and one of the statistics was that I think there's 168 or 186 countries in the world, and every single nationality in the world exists in Ireland, which I find phenomenal. It was a phenomenal statistic to hear that. But that's not represented through the radio stations or through TV, you know, or we don't get to hear that. So I suppose what I love, there's one particular conversation where you hear some guys from the Irish Refugee Council, and they have this debate about what's better, rugby or football. And it's just, for me, it's the sound of that, more interestingly, and hearing those fantastic different voices, you know, describing this, is just, you know, it's a wonderful piece of radio that Michelle and Victoria did for Heat FM. You know, it was really good on that level. Sorry, I'm waffling away.
but there are, it does cut across a lot of different themes, and all that part about accent on radio, and all that part about it's so seldom to hear foreign voices on radio and stuff. It's just a whole wealth of stuff. But maybe we'll wrap it up at that, Garrett.
Sorry, we did this amazing conversation actually with the Irish Wheelchair Association, which talked about speech impediments and how there's an incredible, and they really put their points across well, about how discrimination exists surrounding speech. And it was a wonderful piece of you know,
is that the piece? And there's a woman, and is there a sound of a breathing apparatus or something in the background?
That's correct.
Yeah, it's really. I'm not sure what it was, kind of disconcerting, because, like you say, you so seldom hear that kind of voice or conversation on radio.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And they're completely discriminated against.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we just wanted to, I suppose our position is not to, you know, we try, everybody who we met, we didn't necessarily agree with their points of view, but our position was non-judgmental. That's one of the things we went in. So we didn't go in, like, there was people saying things that we wouldn't necessarily agree with, but we were going, okay, that's, but it needs to be listened to. And I think that was another kind of area. Sorry, I'm trying to fit in far too much.
there is a lot of stuff there, and we'll come back and talk again, maybe more generally, about some of those topics. But for today, perhaps we'll leave it at that. And it's on 94.3 FM, isn't that right?
Yeah, until, and it goes all the way till November 18th.
November 18th.
59, near just before midnight, we cut off.
Yeah.
And then it goes into the archive, the Heat FM archive. But I would like to say, one more thing, was that we're having a workshop in the Project Arts Centre in January 17th. If you go onto our website, heatfm.com, and look at workshop, and we're having an appraisal of Heat FM, and it's like a critical appraisal because we want, it's an advocacy, it's a political advocacy artwork at the end of the day, and we want the website to act as a resource moving forward for 18 to 25 year olds. So if people want to come along, they just email us at contact@heatfm.com and they can book a place for that, and